following our brethren who prepared Brother Kenneth Clay's For Baptism into Christ, a discussion of scriptures of faith, humility, and love, with comments from Pastor Russell. Brief scriptures of unity and oneness, with comments from Pastor Russell. Unity, Psalm 133, verse 1. Behold, how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. This psalm seems to be especially applicable to our day. All who have the spirit of the head must be in sympathy with the fellow members of the body. That's volume 6, page 132. Unity, Ephesians 4, verse 3. Endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace, the oneness of the Spirit, Rotherham, the Spirit of love, unity of the faith, fullness of mind. 1. John 17, verse 11, that they may be one as we are, not a oneness of person, but a oneness of heart, of mind, of purpose. The real church is composed of believers who are one with the Father and the Son and with each other. John 17, verse 21, that we may be one as thou, Father, art in me, and I in thee, one in heart, purpose, and love. Volume 6, page 213. Oneness of spirit, oneness of purpose. 1, from Romans 12, verse 5, so we being many are one body in Christ. The head of the body, Jesus, controls the body, thinks for it, plans for it, and uses the various members to assist each other. Volume 6, page 73. 1. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 17. For we being many are one bread and one body, for we are all partakers of that one bread. The body anointed as shares in the same joys, blessings, hopes, promises, and sufferings. 1 Corinthians 12, verse 12. For as the body is one and hath many members, and all the members that one body being many are one body, we also are in Christ. Christ and his church have but one name or body, one spirit, all members under the control of the head, all bound together by love and common interest. One body in unity, the oneness of the church with each other and with the Lord. Volume 6, page 236. As the anointing oil was poured upon the head and ran down the high priest's beard, to the skirts of his garment, it anointed the entire body, typifying the anointing throughout the gospel age. The Christ which Jesus the head controls and for which he thinks, plans, and provides using the various members to help each other. Volume 6, page 273. 1. 1 Corinthians 12, 13. For by one Spirit we are all baptized into one body. All receive the beginning of the Holy Spirit. God's people are all one. Whatever denomination they are founded, by the anointing, the members may be recognized as one with Christ, baptized into one Spirit, the Spirit of devotion to God. 1. Galatians 3:28. Ye are all one in Christ Jesus. All are on the same level in God's sight. God regards each not in the flesh, but in the spirit. The least who retains this vital union with Christ are certain of eternal life, as is the greatest. There is one body of which Christ Jesus is the head. These consecrated believers are joint heirs of the promise made to Abraham. 1. Colossians 3:15. Ye are called in one body. There is but one prize offered by the scriptures during this age. Remember Isaiah 28, verse 1. Woe to the crown of pride. This pertains to both natural and spiritual Israel, the pride of worldly prosperity and the self-sufficiency. Revelation 3, verse 11. Hold that fast which thou hast, that no man take thy crown. The crowns are limited, and there are some who will lose theirs to those who are faithful. Volume 3, page 225, and Volume 6, page 95. From 1881 until the doors shall fully close is a period of sifting, as respects all who are already in divine favor. John 15, verse 2. Every branch in me that beareth not fruit, he taketh away. Those are various serious words, brethren. Left Wallamer, Maryland, January 1953 for New York City and registration into New York University for graduate work. Went through interviews and tests for entrances. Found the University of Baltimore, my BS degree in industrial management, received in 1950. Did not meet NYU's entrance requirements for graduate study in the field of industrial management. Thus required to spend 15 hours at New York University Undergraduate School of Commerce for a second BS degree in business management. Then could study for master's degree at the graduate school. Went back home to York, Pennsylvania, May 1953 to September 1953 to prepare for entrance into New York University School of Commerce in September 1953, and also studied with our newly found Little Ecclesia in York, Pennsylvania. Stayed in New York, then from 1953 to May 1955, back home again to York, Pennsylvania, May 55 to July 55, spent this time preparing for writing the thesis for graduate degree. Back to New York City, July 55 to September 1955 to defend the thesis. Back home to York, Pennsylvania, where mother died January 15, 1980. Stayed in York, Pennsylvania until August 1980. Cashed in all my stocks, bonds, and savings. Sold the property and was invited to relocate to Tacoma, Washington to study with the Tacoma, Olympia, and Seattle, Washington Ecclesias. Now, if all the above confuses you, forget it. From then on to now, everything I did was controlled by the Lord. My base was Tacoma, Washington, but we were 30 miles south, north of Olympia, the capital, that ecclesia, and 30 miles south of Seattle, that ecclesia. While in New York City, I studied Sundays at the 23rd Street YMCA with the ecclesia there. Wednesday evening studies were at the home of Sister Amy and Norma Mitchell in Brooklyn, New York. Also allowed sufficient time for my school studies and my part-time day job to go to the Dawn at least two, sometimes three evenings a month to spend time with Brother Michael Stomulus for the proper Greek translations. Visited the printing work at Dawn and had many lunches and dinners with the brethren at the Dawn homes. While returning home to York, Pennsylvania during several weekends, in the summer, would study with the beautiful York Ecclesia, Mother's Ecclesia now, and Brother Albertus Buck, the elder. Also helped to tract on weekends and set up monthly annual conventions. The brethren were aged, and I'd had the strong young legs and the desire to do it so they could prepare and also offer their wonderful work at the actual conventions and that public meetings were set up. Well, the Dawn had a beautiful arrangement that once a month, on a Sunday, they would send a recognized elder as a speaker down. And we, the ones that we recognized, we invited them to come down Saturday and stay with us Saturday night, dinner and Sunday morning breakfast, lunch Sunday afternoon, and give the talk. And sometimes they would leave us and go to the nearby Lancaster Ecclesia. But this way, we got to know each other very thoroughly. There. On Sundays in New York, we studied with the New York City Ecclesia at the 23rd Street YMCA. On Wednesdays, we studied with the Ecclesia at Brooklyn, New York, in the home of Sisters Mitchell. And these are the brethren that the Lord used to prepare me for baptism into Christ. Let's start with a convention in Wilmington, Delaware, held April 2nd, 1955. That's copy, the printed copy of that beautiful convention that weekend is attached. See your printed notes. On Saturday, April 2nd, the first discourse, I may add that Brother Peter Coleman, I think, was the, I don't list it. I think he was the chairman throughout all Saturdays and Sundays. Now, back to the opening discourse of Brother Michael Stomulus. There was my favorite. I could talk about Brother Michael for hours. as I said, we would go over there and spend 2-3 hours, maybe once, twice a month, studying with him the Greek. Here is where I learned about the parousia, the epiphany, and the apocalypsis, and I learned also that wonderful special volume, Our Most Holy Faith, and in there was what I thought was the finest article that Brother Russell had ever written about the Greek meeting of the presence, the bright shining, and the appearing. Michael was a wonderful teacher, slowly, and a pleasure to work with. I was a student, he was the teacher. And when he would come down to York, I couldn't predict it. We'd dare ask the dorm because they make the schedules in advance. And when he came down, we had invited him to stay Saturdays and then Sundays, and we could talk. It was a pleasure to work with him. He had told me one little story that he was the barber at the dorm, and some of the younger brother would tease him, but he wasn't upset. He was too kind, and he loved them all. I was ready for my first operation about 1956 or 57, first back operation, and I was scheduled for Monday in the hospital, or Tuesday, I think. Well, anyways, brother stopped me to come down the weekend before, and I was in bed, very painful, and I just couldn't stay in bed. I had to get up and walk down the street with him and back again to learn the truth. What a wonderful teacher for an eager student, and he taught me so much. In fact, we fell in love with Brother Michael Somulis and the Greek Brethren in Athens. We more or less made arrangements with Brother Michael to take money back or send money back. And when he would go over to visit his people in Athens, he would take clothing we'd give him or what have you. We'd mail it to him. He'd send it over. And we more or less looked to him for our little bit of help for the dear brethren in Greece from which he come, in his memory. And later on, when we talked to another wonderful Greek brother, Brother Harry Patience, in the Pittsburgh area, I spent 10 days with his home, and he also brought me closer and closer to the Greek brethren, through Brother Harry and Fanny Patience, when I stayed about 10 days at their home. The Greek class, Sundays, as we did at the 23rd Street YMCA in downtown New York, we would go upstairs, we'd have a study in the morning, maybe 10, 11 o'clock, and then we'd go across the street to the Horn and Hardock restaurant for lunch. We come back for another study in the afternoon. Now, these studies were held on the second floor. The first floor was a big auditorium. We would be in one section on the second floor, and the Greek brethren in another section. And then we'd all reassemble after the second talk on Sunday afternoons and go down to the auditorium where a brother would give a good discourse. I met such wonderful Greek brethren, Brother Pantel Hagis, who took over when Brother Michael Somulis, more or less, when the Lord called him home, and then Ted Constant was there. Let's see, they were his son and daughter were my age, so I would pal around with them. And then dear Harry Patience and Fanny in Pittsburgh area, where I spent 10 days at their home several years later. I remember a cute little story. Well, first of all, a beautiful story. Brother Pantel Hagis and his wife named their first child born Agape. And he explained that means the highest type of love, perfect love. Isn't that beautiful? Well, I think it was her daughter, little girl was about 5 or 6 years old, and I would stand outside the Y, come down from West 87th Street or wherever I lived, and meet the Norbys and whoever come in there, and then Brother Pantel Hagis and his wife come up, and I would be standing there talking to him, and the little girl was very, very restless. So to calm her down a little bit, I reached down and pat her on the head. She looked up to me and said, "Is that what you got to do, stand there and pat me on the head?" These are stories I'll never forget. The lovely Greek brethren who were so instrumental in getting me into the truth. And later on, Brother Hagis asked me if I would be nice enough to take notes on some of the other discourses. He had a poor command of English, and especially poor in sentence structure, so I said yes. I would make notes and then type them up and break them down by sentences and paragraphs, Xerox them, and send copies to them. And he and I became more closer than ever. But we still miss Brother Michael Somulis.
Father, that I will go through the rest of this tape. It was Brother Michael Stoner. This would drew me closer to the Lord. Humility, kindness, and understanding of the real scriptures, I shall never forget him, and so I still think of him today. And I know the Lord's taking care of him. I missed him terribly when the Lord called him home, but he's got work for him on the other side of the veil. And I know Brother Michael will be faithful then as he was here in this life. You know that, you know probably that I was attending the University of Baltimore, and I had been baptized into the First Methodist Church in York, Pennsylvania before I came to Baltimore. And naturally, they thought continued. So on Sundays to relax, I would go down to the Mount Vernon Place United Methodist Church in Mount Vernon Plaza there, next to Peabody Conservatory, and that was my church. So the old story is, like Frank and Ernest, you stay home and you hear, tap the tune on the radio. I don't think you happen. I think the Lord kind of directs you to it, and you like it, you get the messages, and then after a while, well, you do get disgusted with the church, the Methodist church, and you write the literature, and you send them to your home in York. You go home maybe once, sometimes once every 2 months, once a month, and spend the weekend. And it was there that Rodon sent my name to Brother Ralph Crumling with the Reading class in Reading, Pennsylvania. And he happened to come down to Sunday when I was there. The Lord directed that to. And he told me that there's a visitor next month coming down from the Dawn, an elder, Brother Leon Norby, who will give a talk that you will like. And that will cover later. But that's really where I got exposed into the truth. The radio, Frank and Ernest, and then Michael Stomulus, Emmett of the Dawn, and Brother Norby put these together. Now, all of a sudden, Brother Norby later on will take over where Brother Michael left off. When the Lord called him home, he sent me to somebody else, Brother Norby. Speaker at the Wilmington Convention on Saturday, April 2nd, following Brother Michael, was Brother Leon Norby. Now we can go into him. Brother Michael's talk was... Subject sympathy was the subject of his talk, and Brother Norby spoke on Isaac type and antitype, and he was good at that. He spoke on the chapter Nahum. I think we studied at the home of a sister White, was it? Anyways, it was about 10 people there. I'd never seen them before. It was in a short distance from my home in York, Pennsylvania, in the borough of West York, Pennsylvania. Norby spoke on Nahum chapter 2. Now you look at that. The shield of his mighty men is made red, and the valiant men... You've got to go to the reprints on that. Well, he bought stuff that Pastor Russell mentioned. I never knew who Pastor Russell was. I didn't know anything about the reprints, but oh my goodness. He spoke, in fact, he had me so confused that I stayed with him 2.5 hours after the meeting was over and asked him, let me see your Bible. He smiled. He said, sure. I said, it doesn't say in Nahum chapter 2 what you spoke about. He talks about the railroads, the chariots, jostling each other, about the coachman coming up, and the he shall count his worthies, where the conductor walks through and counts his people. What a wonderful way to bring me into the truth. I mean, I could tell that he was sincere, that he knew what he was talking about, and it was actual stuff. And that really was the start. He was picking up where Michael Stomulus left off. The Lord saw that I had somebody always to feed me the pure truth. Not going to give up that easy. While attending the University of Baltimore, on Sunday mornings, I would go over to the United Methodist Church, became friends with a pastor, and we had a lovely Sunday school teacher. She was a missionary on leave from China, and we had college students from Johns Hopkins University, from the Maryland General Hospital, the young nurses, the young interns in the University of Baltimore, and other areas there. It was about 25 students. And she was a good teacher, but it didn't ring. After coming back, listening to Brother Norby, and then coming back to the Sunday school class at Mount Vernon Place Methodist Church, something was wrong. The devil is not going to give up. But, the Lord finally won. To my apartment, after the Sunday meetings at the Methodist Church, I would reflect on what the dear lady missionary told us, and what Brother Michael Stomulus and later Brother Norby told us. You see, it's getting now to the point where the devil is being slowly pushed aside, and the Lord's leading me more and more into the truth of what he wants. later started our first conventions in York, Pennsylvania in July of 19, I think it was June, 1955. And I was darn sure to have Brother Norby on the program if the brethren accepted, and they did. And then I would, every chance I would get to attend the studies that he was there or listen to his discourses at the 23rd Street YMCA, I would get closer and closer to him. In fact, later on at our conventions, I would invite he and Mary and their daughter Ruth to come down on a Saturday for our one-day conventions and stay Saturday afternoon and evening, and then the convention Sunday, then go home, have dinner with us, what have you. Well, we had limited space, so I gave up my bed for Ruth Norby to sleep in, and I went down in the living room and slept on a couch that was about 6.5 foot long. My goodness, 6 foot long, and I'm over 6.5 feet, so I didn't get much sleep, but it was worth it. At the dinner table, in the morning, and the breakfast and everything, we learned so much. I remember one instance, he came down. I think he came down by himself. And he had the name and address of a couple in somewhere in York County that even I didn't know the town. We had to check the map. Well, he had the car, and we drove out there. He introduced himself, and they were aghast. It was on a farm, no running water, the outhouse, you know, no hot water. It's just as rural as you could be. And they were amazed to see Brother Norby and listen to him, because they thought there were only two left in this world that the Lord didn't call home. Isn't that marvelous? Well, you better believe I just sat there and didn't say a word. I was so fascinated. Their questions were my questions. The Lord was directing the whole thing. And there again, I saw the importance of the Lord sending me to Brother Norby. And then another time he would come down, and this way he would bring Brother Mary and Ruth with him. And Mary would sit and talk to Mother before the meetings or on the Saturday. And Brother Norby and Ruth and I would go out and track. And we let Ruth do the leading, because I was still rather new and then later on I loved the track, but this time we let the pros teach the rookie how to do it. Our conventions in Baltimore City that we had the word that Sister Mary had passed away. I think Ruth sent me a letter, because I was corresponding with Sister Mary Norby in Florida. She was living with Ruth and her husband then every week up to her death. And we got this snowed, and we had already set our program up, and I think I asked Brother Ray Luke at our Baltimore convention, they were there from Washington, D.C., from Wilmington, what have you, if he would give a little tribute to Mary Norby, and they all loved that. Everybody knew her and loved her. She was 100 or 100 the woman she died, and I'm very pleased to say that I was with her in spirit, with her in letters all the way to the end, and I'm looking forward to meeting the whole family in the kingdom. And you believe me, they are there, building up and waiting for me, I pray, and for Mother. They were so good to us, that family and my family. They loved us all, and we love them. My stepfather, I think, or did I discuss it yet, he never really took the step. Yet he loved the brethren. He invited them into his home, and he would occasionally go to conventions with us, like to Wilmington, or nearby, they had conventions in Reading and Allentown and let's see, Pottstown, Lancaster, but he couldn't go to all of them. Actually, he stayed home and took care of the little girl that we were raising, my brother's girl, and the pets. But basically, he loved the truth, but he could never take that final step. So at memorial time, Mother and I would stay home and take memorial together. I think the elder brothers would meet in their homes. And later on, they had all died, and we were alone. But I would explain it the same, read through the seventh volume, how important it is. And he understood it, but he couldn't make that final step. And I know Sam will awake on the earth. He didn't take the final step of consecration. It will be a pleasure for Mother and I to work with him, as it is, or will be, to work with her parents, my grandparents, who raised me. What a wonderful trip we'll have to make our calling election sure and get together with all the brethren on the other side of the veil. Thank God for everything. Normie, who lived in Jersey and worked at the Dawn, and Michael Somers, who lived at the Dawn homes and worked at the Dawn, were close. Now, the next speaker on the program is Brother Claude Wida from Allentown, Pennsylvania, and his subject was humility. Zupper, Claude Wada, and Orlando Diaper, and I think the third elder was a brother Sockleaver, who had left them to work at the Dawn, and he used to play the violin at the Patterson Conventions. Wonderful. But the real basic elders that I was in contact with were Brother Wada and Brother Diaper. Story about Brother Wada. I loved him very much. The Dawn set him down one Sunday as a speaker, and he brought his wife Effie with him, E-F-F-I-E, I think. And we had no piano in the ecclesia. We had a little group there. So Brother Wada suggested a tune, and we led to it, we turned to it, and nobody would start it, so I volunteered to start it. In my loud, booming voice, I sang the hymn. Sister Effie said, Kenneth, Brother Kenneth, that's the wrong tune. Oh, my goodness. I hope Brother Wada remembered that story all the time. I turned red, white, and blue. Saturday evening for the evening services at 7 o'clock was Brother Ed Fay of Los Angeles, and his talk was, I come to do thy will. That was the immersion service where Brother Mark Mitchell conducted the immersion for First Mother from York, Pennsylvania, then Sister Bertha Campbell from Wilmington, and myself. I came down from New York City. And this is the talk that I enclose in another tape. Please listen to it. And listen to us being immersed into the body of Christ. After Mother had died in January of 1980, I didn't know what to do, I didn't know where to turn, so they had seen in the Dawn, the brethren on the West Coast, that the York PA Mother had died from York PA there, and it listed the obituaries. And I was out there about 3 years earlier at a national basketball tournament in Tacoma, Washington. I was the director of it, paid to go out. And I happened to remember that while I was there, there's going to be a memorial. So I wrote the Dawn quickly, or else I called him up and says, is there an ecclesia in Tacoma, Washington? Who is the secretary? Well, they took care of that. So I notified before I went out there, I notified the secretary that I would be there for this tournament about the first week ended April of 1980. And I met Brother Miles and Sister Fitzpatrick. What was her name? Anyways, I took my boy with him and met the ecclesia, and I managed to have a Sunday study when the games were not being played that day. I partook of the memorial and went back when the tournament was over in April, and then they remembered that they wanted me to come down. They had lost an elder in the previous year, and they're only down to two elders, and so I prayed heavily over this. I studied all summer. The Lord has to tell me what to do now. I'm all alone. My stepfather had died 3 years before, and now mother's passed away. I don't know where to turn. So we went to the Lord. I started back and forth, and I did a lot of praying on this. And finally, the Lord directed me to sell the property. So I flew out there in June of 1980, and while I was there, there was a convention in Portland, and Brother Miles Fitzpatrick said, why don't you, I stayed with them for about 10 days, why don't you take a bus down to Portland and meet them? Well, thank God I did. There I met Timmy Krupa for the first time in years. He met me at the bus terminal, and I spent a wonderful weekend with the Portland, Oregon class. And I think I later met Ray and Vernie. He was in Los Angeles. They came up to be with the convention, and oh, it was such wonderful things. But now we're ready to go, so I sold the property and came back. Rather, I came back and sold the property. All to finalize it. I already had my attorney lined up, and I had the real estate. Listen to this. How do I get a real estate dealer there? Don't laugh at this, but in the evening paper, there's a whole page every Friday evening of the real estate people in New York City and New York County. Well, I was a member of the Chamber of Commerce. My previous employer had paid my way through it, and I could represent the organization and learn about the business. So I didn't know what to do. I called the chairman. They said, well, they can't recommend anybody because they have members of the real estate people on their committees, and it wouldn't be fair. So what I did is I took a quarter and raised my hand above the newspaper and dropped the quarter. I prayed to God what to do. This seems, it's not childish. Well, it fell on a certain name, and I called the agency, and they sent the gal out to me. You ready for this? This gal led the whole York County in sales last year. She was with the first million-dollar property salesman in several years for York County. And that's who they sent out to sell my property. Well, okay, we sold the property, everything was settled up, we met the young Jewish couple, they had two children, and I asked for $10,000, we sent it out to the home bank out there, and packed up everything, got my car and drove across country, and while I'm in Tacoma, I get there to stay now, about the second week in August, I guess, right before the Seattle Labor Day Convention. And at that Labor Day convention, I met Ed Fay. And we recognized each other right away. We embraced and shook hands. And we had lunch with him. And I hugged him again when I left to go back to Tacoma. He left to go to Los Angeles. And here's the Lord's hand again. About a month after Brother Ed left the 1980 Seattle Labor Day convention, the Lord called him home. So he allowed me one more time to meet Brother Ed Fay, the one who gave our baptism with this coach, and I'm so thankful for that. The Lord's all the way. I get no complaints, but he led me every inch of the way. I knew that following Brother Fay's discourse was Martin Mitchell with the Immersion Service. And Martin and I became very, very close. You remember, at the home of Amy Mitchell, the mother in Brooklyn, was her daughter Norma Mitchell in the apartment. Roy Mitchell was an elder with the New Yorker class, and Martin Mitchell, another son, what a beautiful family, was with the Dawn. And Martin loved poetry, and so did I. We became very close. I remember occasionally they send Martin. He was a quiet, shy brother, and I loved him very much. I could sit and talk with him, reason with him. So I wouldn't just spend time with Michael Steinmetz at the Dawn continually. I'd go around. I didn't want to make a nuisance of myself, but if I could stay for dinner, you see, and it's over about 5, 6 o'clock around there, I could take a bus back to New York, get ready for work the next morning, or whatever it would be, and I could talk to the other brethren. But Martin Mitchell was always close. He loved poetry, and so did I, and we became very close. And, well, it's a pleasure to talk about these brethren who were so close to me. Again, another one the Lord used to bring me closer and closer. And then the evening program was at 8:15, and a European Journey in Kodachrome by Brother Ed Fay again, and that includes the evening services. We were immersed at the Adventist Church, 11th and Adams Street, that Saturday evening. The rest of the convention was held at the Church Auditorium at 807 West Street. I forget the name of that church. Oh, I'm a little confused, but you notice on your program, Saturday, April 2nd, the Church Auditorium, 807 West Street, and then evening services at the Adventist Church, 11th and Adams Street for the Immersion Service. Now, all day Sunday, we were at the Hotel DuPont from 9:30 until the convention was over, and that's where Mother stayed with, did my stepbrother come? I don't think so, no. He had to stay home and take care of the little girl we were raising, my brother's girl, and the two pets. But that was that. York, just for the summer sometime, I was still corresponding with Brother Martin with the Dawn. We were very close. Morning session on April the 3rd, 1955, at open 9:15 with a discourse by Brother Felix Wasserman from New York City. His subject, It Is Written. Another dear brother, I think he was one of the directors of the Dawn or of the New York Ecclesia or something. And I was so close to, now I'm going to get my names here right, be patient. I think Felix Wasserman, his wife was Nancy Wasserman, and his daughter was Janet. Now, Janet Wasserman married George Yike, leader eventually who led the Dawn Factory. And the quick story there is that they would come to New York to the YMCA on 23rd Street Sundays, and they bring their baby with them. Peter? I'm not sure. But I saw that this very young couple, and they were, well, the baby. They needed a little relaxation. So I said, after a month or so, I says, how about if I take care of the baby for a few minutes, half an hour, something like that, and you and husband and wife, the mother and father, can go off and relax and talk to the brethren in the fellowship. That means so much, you see. Because when you're with the Dawn all day, 7-6 days a week, you want to look forward to meeting with other brethren, especially the 23rd Street Y class. They did that. Later on, this boy grew up, and I came back to the Dawn many years later to a convention in Patterson, I think. And they got me a room there in the Dawn home. And it was the young son of George Ike and Nancy, or Janet, that picked me up at the airport and then took me back to the airport to fly back to Wisconsin. And I understand later on that he passed away or died or something in an accident. I think Janet Ike is at the retirement home in Portland. If I'm wrong on this, I'm sorry, but memory is hazy now. My many travels, I would occasionally come back to Wilmington, which more or less became my favorite convention to relax. Of course, I didn't fly back from Washington State, but from Wisconsin, what have you, lived three places there. And Richard Vincent was the elder there. And he recognized me, well, couldn't help but recognize me, and he asked me if I'd give a prayer. He said, by the way, what city are you in now? That's how I traveled. But I always had a fondness in my heart for the Wilmington Convention. It's a little story about Peter Coloman after a while that you will love. Peter was more or less the founder and the key elder. There is such a thing as a key elder. But he was the one that, he was the glue that held it together. Let's see, we're back on Sunday now. Is the 11 o'clock Sunday morning speaker, Brother Arthur Crumple, from the Dawn. His subject, I Am the Bread of Life. He had married Sister Ethel. They both worked at the Dawn, and she was the proofreader. And Arthur had that beautiful German dialect. You see, York County, Pennsylvania, southern Pennsylvania, more or less a suburb of Baltimore now, that was all Pennsylvania Dutch. The German, although it was a city, and the state was set up by William Penn, Pennsylvania, it means Penn's Woods, and the east little town, all the way out to Coatesville, Downingtown, Lancaster, York, east little town had a center square or a park near the center square, which was called Penn Common or Penn Park. And that's how we got all the names. The names in York streets were like King Street, Queen Street, Princess Street, Prince Street, you see, after England. But it was the Germans that settled the surrounding areas, the farmers, the good old German people. And I remember during the Revolutionary War, we studied this in the 1776s, when they sent when the Congress sent Benjamin Franklin west to the counties. He never got to York, but he would stop on the farms and try to get produce or get young fellows to recruit for Washington's army. And they say in their German dialect, we don't care who wins the war, we're neutral with this for herself. But I'll tell you, I don't think any of them ever supported the British. Memories. Brother Crumple was the one that pushed me hardest to immerse. He said, I'm ready now, but I said, Brother Arthur, I'm waiting for Mother to be ready. We can do it together as a team. And the Dawn would send him down. But again, I want to go over to the Dawn. I occasionally make to him and then talk to him at the New York City meetings when he come over to lead the class or talk. And occasionally, Dawn would send him over to the Wednesday evening studies in Brooklyn at the home of the Mitchell sisters. Yes. Brother Crumple was good. And then he said, later on, he said he thinks I should join the elders and deacons meeting. I said, I don't want to be an elder. I said, that's all right, you just listen. And he sort of pushed me. Now, let's see here. Sister Ethel died, and then he went and married some sister from Maine, I think, and he lived up there. So I saw him one more last time. When Ludlow Loomis was at the Women in Ecclesia, about a year before he died, he made in his will, he stayed with the Colomans in their home, and he put in his will that any savings he had should go to the Women in Ecclesia to use for a convention in the University of Delaware Law School Auditorium, a beautiful place. And that's where I met Arthur Mitchell coming down with a friend from Maine to visit, and we renewed acquaintances again. Another dear brother whom the Dawn would send to our class occasionally on Sundays, and we brought to our convention in York, Pennsylvania. Was to drive the station wagon between the Dawn factory, where they bound up the books and everything, and take them to the post office. Good brother. All these dear brethren and those that were married, most of the wives came with them to Wilmington to see Mother and I immersed. I'm so thankful for that. And the program is in closing the notes here. Remember, I mentioned earlier about the book the Dawn published, Our Most Holy Faithful. I was so impressed with it that I wrote down to Mother and says, please discuss it with the class if they're willing to study it. Especially leading up to that wonderful story about the epiphany, the parousia, and the apocalypse, I would buy a new copy for them and bring them down. And they said yes. And I think they got as much thrill I did out of it as going through that wonderful, which I still say is one of the finest pieces of literature that Pastor Russell ever wrote. The speaker on the Sunday afternoon program, April 3rd, 55, was the 1:30 talk after lunch by Brother Ray McCrupa of the Dawn. They listened as a New York, New York class. His subject was the Lamb of God, and then they closed it with a public discourse at 3 o'clock by Brother Ed Fay called Armageddon and World Peace. We were close to Ray. I would go over there. Remember, I was studying management now, and I would stop by him. I think sometimes I was a nuisance because I interrupted their work and talked to them because I'd try to get them going so they would help me. Well, Ray would ask me, since you're studying management and he's in charge of the Dawn, would you have any ideas of this and that? And I said, well, you're doing a good job. And I tried to help him and try to encourage him, and I think I did. He was a sweet brother. He was like Martin Mitchell, so calm and so relaxed, and he was a wonderful public speaker. Ray Krupa, he reminds me so much of Ray Luke from Jersey City. The same demeanor, the same style. But we talked about Felix and Nancy Washman. Nancy played the organ at the Dawn home where they had the recording studio for the Frank and Ernest radio programs. And she and I became close because I love music. And a lot of times when Felix would be at a convention, I'd sort of power up with her and talk to her. And I remember one time we were discussing about outer space. We had seen something about is there life? And we discussed that, not during the talk, of course, but before and after. And we kind of agreed that there's no life out there. There's no water to support the life or as we know it. There's no plowed fields. There's no food. It's too cold. It's too hot. So it was wonderful talking to her. And she was a good conversationalist. So I not only just talked to the brethren, I talked to their wives too, their consecrated wives, which is a good thing for me to learn because they can always learn, the inquisitive mind. From New York City, I was coming to the Wilmington Convention like Friday afternoon or Friday evening, and Sister Bertha Campbell, who was immersed with Mother and I, her son picked me up at the bus terminal. It was a train station, I don't remember, and took me to the Hotel DuPont where we were all staying there. I met Mother and what have you. But I understand later on he went over to Israel. I'm not sure. But I wasn't too close to her son. Sister Bertha was deaf or had a speech problem or something, but we still embraced, we still hugged. She and Mother and I were the trio that gave our hearts to the Lord that particular evening on Saturday, April 2nd, 1955. Wonderful memories. And I don't know if I haven't seen it done today yet. Each of the three brethren that were immersed would have sort of a counselor. Now, Mother had Sister Ethel Crumple, and I forgot who was with Sister Campbell, but I had Martin Mitchell, the immerser. And Mother was so joyful and happy that when they brought her out of the water, she fainted on the side of the pool, and Sister Ethel was right there to help her. Mother was so excited, so wonderfully pleased to give her soul to the Lord. It was just so beautiful. It was beautiful that she just wrapped herself into it so much that now I knew that this is what she wanted, what she was waiting for, and it was a thrill for me and an honor to be baptized with my mother. And I was there up to the death. I was in the hospital that night. She passed away at night. I went out. She had a stroke. I would go out there several times a day, and or several times a week, rather. And the last evening, I went out there about 9 o'clock at night. I told the doctor. He says, well, he says, Ken, I know how you love your mother, don't pray for her because she holds her sides paralyzed. And I went home that night, peace of mind. I prayed, the Lord put me to sleep. And about midnight, they called and said, your mother passed away. Everything was taken care of. I'd already arranged for the funeral director. So see what the Lord does when you call him to help. Even in great times of trial, he's right there with you all the way, as he was with Mother. Printed notes. Look at page 6, page 7, and page 8, our first convention in New York, Pennsylvania. Now, what happened, although Mother and I were immersed in April of 55, we had been planning this convention 6-7 months before. And we picked a June in June 19th in 1955, and we asked our brother Bup to act as chairman for our first convention, and we had so many more. But look now on page 8, and you'll see the program on the left side, then the fact that the Dawn Bible Group has organized in the YWCA, and that the follow-up speaker the following Sunday, 1 week from June the 19th, was Brother Norby, from the Don to give a follow-up talk. I didn't keep the number of the tenets of the brethren we had at that first convention, or whether the public was, but the public talk was given by Brother Woodworth, When a Man Dies. Beautiful. Senior, forget that word, our two elders, Brother John Smith, I got from the Dawn, and I visited his home about five, 6 blocks from our home. When I come back and got him enthused to come down to our place for the Sunday meetings to start at noon. And Brother Alvarez Buff from West York, and he had a horrible, this is unbelievable. I've never seen anybody go through what he went through. I'll try to get it in as brief as I can. He was married to a Jehovah's Witness, and his daughter had married a circuit rider, or whatever you call it, for the several states, and he lived a life that nobody should live. The Lord brought him to us in the early time there, maybe way back March or April of 1955, and to lead the class, because I was in New York a lot. And then we brought Brother Buck down, and those two were so helpful to Mother. But 5 years he did this. And then when the death came, my grandfather died about on Tuesday of that week, and Brother Buck died on a Wednesday. We had two funerals in one day, one for my grandfather in the morning and Brother Buck in the afternoon. And he was a solid Jehovah's Witness to the end. In fact, to sum it up as best as I can, Mother would write me and say, when the meeting's over, Brother Buck would sit there on Sundays and cry. He says, "Sister, I can't go back to that home. They'd be waiting for it." Now, you know what happens if they call someone like us and he will serve it. He lives with this woman. Then the daughter comes up with her son-in-law. What a terrible trial he went through, but he stayed to the end. Believe me, he stayed until the end. And we went to his funeral. And we had, I think, Brother W.A. Baker or Sam Baker come down from the Dawn. And I told him, "You're going to have about 75 Jehovah's Witnesses there, plus our small class." And I said, "Hit him hard." He did. And he looked at me when it was all over. He said, "Nothing happened." No, I said, "They didn't come up to him." Then we went to the funeral at the graveside, gave another talk, and they still didn't say anything. So I don't know what happened. YMCA, where we tried to get the auditorium, and you can see what they didn't, what he wanted us to do. We said no. The next page, page 7, is the form letter they sent out in those days. This way, Ernest, Frank and Ernest is telling everybody that we mailed this letter to, and we sent it out quite a few hundred, that his partner Frank was coming down to speak in York on the. Well, we ran out of tape. I had to turn the tape over. Because the only time I met all three, Frank and Ernest and the Brother Woodworth, Brother George Wilson, and Brother Russell Pollock was the announcer. We met them at a Philadelphia convention. There was no more class in Philadelphia. It was a big class at that time. And we brought Mother there. We had a wonderful time. But it was good to talking to them again. I don't know what year it was, but we enjoyed the fellowship. That I carried with me all over the country, even years and years ago, a 5x8 picture of the three together, Frank, Ernest, and the announcer, Russell, and I kept it to this day. Wonderful memories, wonderful memories.
Sister what?
Her sister Amy, the mother of Norma and Martin and Roy. We happened to be sitting together at the 23rd Street YMCA for the afternoon session there. There was a speaker there, and so often in those days, they ran over. 60 minutes was too long to hold a group after we've been studying all day. So about 5 minutes in the overtime, he finally decides to sum it up, and he says, "Well, we'll sum it up now." And Sister Amy, sitting next to me, was squirming around like a cat on a hot tin roof. She yells out, "It's about time!" And everybody busts out laughing. She was a dear soul. The Mitchells were wonderful people. Little stories like that, you want to know. A lot, as we get close to the summer months, maybe once, twice a month, and help with the York class, help with the public meetings. I remember dear Brother Bob, we needed him for chart talks, and after about the third or fourth one in different months, he would say, "Brother Clannis, not another chart talk." I said, "No, we're going to save your breath and use the Dawn Bible Answers films now for our public meetings." So we go to Harrisburg, we go to the Capitol, we go to Red Line, the second largest city in York County, and then we go to Hanover. See, I set all these up and did the tracking and arranged for the publicity because they're elderly people. I remember one terrible time we had a public meeting set up. Oh, my goodness. And Mother was out tracting. I told her, don't do that. And she fell and broke her ankle. Now, she is the one that prepares the meals at the convention. Fortunately, this is only a one-day convention, and how the Lord was with us. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't take the whole group. It was about the speakers and their wives, and I only said that about them and the media class, about 20 brethren. And to go to the Yorktown Hotel for lunch would have cost an arm and a leg. So across the street was a restroom. And I remember that I passed that way, and while I was worrying about where to have the lunch, I just walked over, rapped on the window, and the girl says, yes, the manager. And she says, well, she said, we don't open Sundays. This was Saturday. Mother broke her ankle on a Friday. She says, but if it's a church group, and we're right across, incidentally, right next to the YWCA where we held our meetings, was the First Methodist Church where I was confirmed or baptized, whatever you call it, into the Methodist Church. But that didn't last at home. Anyways, she opened the place for us Sunday and gave us a choice of menu. Everybody walked right across the street, mother and her crutches and everything. That's how the Lord took care of us all the way. You see, mother's parents, my grandparents, raised me. They had two boys and a girl. The boys, Uncle Charles and Uncle Harry, had girls, and mother had the boy. And I was the first boy born, and they insisted that my mother let them raise me, and she did. And I stayed with them. Grandmother died when I was 16, and I stayed with granddad until I was 18. But in the meantime, we've got to tell you what mother told me. Now, mother must have been around about 12 years old when she saw Pastor Russell at the Alhambra Theater in York, Pennsylvania. Her mother had been reading it and following it, and I think, I don't know if she was going to a study in York or not, but he came from Allegheny to speak at the theater in York. And my mother had to go along, and she remembers this dignified man that come out on the stage about 5 minutes before curtain time. It was like an 8 o'clock talk, and he looked at his watch. He says, in 5 minutes, we close the door. And mother said he closed the door at 5 o'clock. And I understand later on from her through one of the ushers that she spoke to, he said it's not fair for those who come 30, 40 minutes ahead of time and sit there patiently wait for those who come the last minute, the last 2 minutes. That was the first visit, and I think he came again a year or so or 2 years later into York, Pennsylvania. And then after that, the 1916 date where he passed away, and this is what my mother told me. My granddad didn't want to talk about it. The point was that grandmother felt that this was the end. This is the one that led them into the truth, and this is the one that stayed with him. Now he's gone. What do we do? So she went back to the German Lutheran Church. She didn't realize that the Lord says, well, you don't consecrate to follow a man, you consecrate to follow the Lord's Savior. Grandmother knew that. So she went to the, oh my goodness, she was confused. She went back to the Lutheran Church, and then later on she wound up with the group, I don't know, it's a long story there. I don't know if we have time for it here. But she went so deep in, she joined an Assembly of God, which was called a Pentecostal church, and I was had to be dragged there by granddad. Said, "Where your mother go? Where your grandmother goes, you go." And I'd see these get up and speak in tongues on Wednesday night and fall over and roll. I couldn't believe this stuff. So when she died, she had told my grandfather. If she died, she wants that lady pastor, Alverta Becker, to speak at her sermon. Well, sermon at the funeral, and granddad had said, "If you go home in the family, and none of grandmother's relations came, they sent buckets of mother's flowers." But it was just immediate family there. She stay with that group to the end. So Mother and I often discussed, we got a thickens of a time. There's wonderful things about the truth and everything. No third person in the Trinity. God the Father, Jesus the Son. No hellfire torment. But she forgot to tell me about the presence. And that's why the Lord seemed to lead me so closer to Michael Simulus, where we went over the Parousia, the Epiphania, the Apocalypsis, and that wonderful Our Most Holy Faith booklet, where we had studied it briefly in New York, and then I asked them to do it in York, and all of a sudden, the light started open. So now I'm ready, I'm home now. This is 1978, 79, and what am I going to do? Well, I had everything ready to go. I didn't know the Lord was going to send me over out to Tacoma, Washington, 3,000 miles away, but I did know this. I was meeting one Sunday with the Wilmington, Delaware class, and another Sunday with the Phoenixville class with Hilda Mary Geisinger. Now, we're both about the same distance from our home in York. But now what am I going to do? So we prayed, and we found out that all of a sudden the Phoenixville Clay exploded. They were on the third volume, and they're going to follow that last chapter, Thy God Reigneth. And that's what it is. I was living in Lancaster at that time, and going back and forth. I had moved to Lancaster to study with a Lancaster class, but that didn't work out. I'm jumping ahead, trying to save time here. But when I found out that they were going to discuss that, I studied that. I wrote as high as 8-10 pages and prayed and prayed. This was the only thing that held me up from being a complete footstep follower. Thy God Reigneth, 1874-1878 date. And it made it so clear in that class, and I appreciate and thank them today for that. Favorite volume, volume 3, and was out in Tacoma. I was out there a little while, and they started to study the third volume, and we went into the early part by Daniel, chapter 12, oh, the wonderful, wonderful Daniel, and that had me study deeper and deeper, because one of my classes, the Lord so directed me. I was in Tacoma, Washington, 30 miles to the north was Seattle, Sunday classes. We studied Tacoma Thursday before lunch, Thursday after lunch. 30 miles to the south was Olympia, the capital, and we studied there I forgot the names. And then 30 miles to the east was the class in Bremerton, where I worked with. So, you see, Tacoma, 30 miles from everything. 30 miles to the west was a Bremerton class, and 30 miles to the east was a mountain. So, that's how I did it. And I remember the fog would roll in, and they'd call me up from Olympia, don't come up with fog or something like that. And I met the Seattle class was so good and everything like that. But it was at the Olympic class in the capital where they were studying. They had just finished the class and they invited me down. And I came there on a Tuesday or whatever it was. And they just happened to be, they voted on the class. I didn't vote because it was new. They voted to study the book of Daniel. Not the volumes, but the book of Daniel. So I had to do a lot of research and publishing and keep interrupting the leader to bring in the points out. And one of the sisters said after one of the meetings, she says, "That's the truth." So what am I going to say? I'm a guest in the home. I can't criticize too much. Back, I try to come back almost every year to the Wilmington Convention, no matter where I was, except to Washington State. That's too far. But I was at this convention, and Mary brought Bill up in a wheelchair, and we shook hands, and we embraced, and he started to cry. Bring back wonderful memories we had. And I never forgot that. He was so close, and he was the one the Lord used to bring me in so I could go to the convention. Of course, I've been talking here for quite a while. I'm going to stop and rest. If I can finish it tonight, fine. If not, then tomorrow. So don't lose this thought. We'll pick up the speakers of our first convention in York, Pennsylvania on Sunday, June the 19th at the YWCA, and there's a story right there. Okay, don't go away. Okay, we did not accept the YMCA's offer, but we did search around and found out a brand new YWCA, and we talked to them, and they said, of course, only $25 a day for the convention, plus if you want to, a tip of $5 to the janitors set up and clean up. Now, our chairman was Brother Claude Wyder from Allentown. And then we asked Brother Bupp to follow with a program of devotions and welcome. Look at your program on page 8. First speaker was Brother Woodworth. We didn't list the titles, did we? No. Norman Woodworth. We understand later on that Sister Woodworth is unusual. In fact, I never heard of this. After several years, I forgot their first name, Sister Woodworth had herself immersed a second time. So I don't remember much about her, but Norman was very popular. He was the really leader of the Dawn, and he would come over. I don't remember him ever leading a study, either at the Mitchell's home on Wednesdays or at the 23rd Street Y on Sundays. But he did occasionally make speeches. I remember one of my favorite talks he gave about Sadducees. And he would say, they were sad, you see. He had a good speaking voice, and, well, we wanted to bring our convention off to a roaring start, And we brought Brother Woodworth to start it, and Brother Woodworth to finish the one-day convention. Prayer, Praise, and Testimony was by Bill Geisinger. Now, we always told a little joke about Bill and Mary. You see, we had no pianist, but there was a beautiful big grand piano on the stage at the York YWCA. We needed a piano player. And we found out that Mary Geisinger played the piano for the Phoenixville class, so one way or the other, almost every convention, we brought Bill and Mary up. Bill could give a talk, a discourse, or a public meeting, or testimony meeting, but we got to have Mary up there. It was one of our jokes. And they'd bring little Marcia along, and she sort of palled around with our brother's girl that Mother and I were raising, Lana Mae. But Bill, I didn't follow up on this. He was very good. He was another brother that was so helpful to me. Although he wasn't with the Dawn. Remember the Phoenixville, how we got studying with him on the Thy God Reigneth, where I learned about the parousia, the presence. Bill was good. Now, Peter Colliman, he gave the 215 discourse, as you can see on page 8, from Wilmington. Peter was what we call a maverick. He did what he wanted to. Well, now remember, we had worked hard to get our first convention off the ground. And the Lord led us to the YWCA on East Market Street, which I said were two doors away from my Methodist church, where I was baptized, or whatever you call it, accepted into the church. And it was my pleasure every convention to go down there and put tracts of the public meeting in the windows of the cars that were parked there. We were quite exceptionally close there. Across the street from them was the Christian Scientist Church. On Sundays, they got the tracks in the window. And then I walked down the hill to a Lutheran church. That was on Broad Street. And then I come back and take a little rest and walk about two blocks away to the First Presbyterian Church. I had gone there for Sunday school. Grandmother didn't care where I went as long as I went. And that, I think, was the churches on East Market and beyond. But we covered a lot of time. I don't think we ever got anything out of it, but gosh almighty, we enjoyed it. Peter. On our first convention, it just so happened that the East Coast director of the Young Women's Christian Association was in York at that time. And I went out to see if everything was all right in the lobby so we could close the doors, and the desk clerk introduced me to this lady, and this is the so-and-so, the East Coast. I said, that's fine. So I said, by the way, see, we were the first convention to use the auditorium. It was so brand new. One or two local groups had used it for Bible studies in one of the rooms, but we were the first to engage the entire convention, that is, the big auditorium, a study room, and the cafeteria to serve our meals. Peter gave a talk. Now, I asked her if she would like to hear one of the speakers, and so happened Peter was coming on after lunch. I said, I'll put an extension speaker out here in the lobby. Nobody will bother you. So Peter, the person that he was, he starts blasting the Christian in the YW Christian Association. I was so embarrassed. And he thought it was part of his talk. And I didn't scold him. What the heck? I invited him up there. The class invited him up, and I guess the director didn't mind. They opened it up to all fields. You see, they didn't restrict if you were Catholic or Jewish or what. They rented the auditorium later on to everybody. So, a little embarrassing to us. I remember at one of the Wilmington conventions I attended, he had brought an outside opera singer in who knew nothing about the truth. And he was criticized for that. He didn't care. He didn't care. I visited Minnie's home. Steve Carreni from the Wilmington class. I drove down to his home in Christiana, Pennsylvania, and he said, would I like to see Peter? Peter was close to death. And we drove down and I talked to him, and he smiled. He couldn't talk, but he brought back all those memories. Peter was the one that kept the Wilmington people going. A wonderful brother, but he had his ways. You'd have to be used to it. Now, of course, the climax was the discourse, the public talk by Brother Woodworth. When a man dies, And you can see the little publicity we got there between that. And then we announced after that that the following Sunday there will be a follow-up meeting by Leon H. Norby of the Dawn here at the YWCA, but in a separate room. And his title was, Rightly Dividing the Word of Truth. And that's all it was for the York Convention, the first one. Then we made a list later on of all the brethren that served York, and that's on the last page, page 11 of your notes, the bottom left-hand side. Our first annual convention, 1955, we went through 1962 every year. Now I'll go down the list. Henry Anderson. This also includes some of the names I remember that the Dawn sent down. Sometimes they'd get the same brother once every 2 months or something like that. But anyways, our first speaker alphabetically was Brother Henry Anderson. He was an elder with the New York City class. I think it was Henry Anderson, Roy Mitchell, and Russell Dean. I don't remember much about Henry. And the second speaker, alphabetically, or the second person, was John Barakas, and I don't know much about him. I don't remember much about John. Apparently he was a Greek brother, but I'm not too familiar with him. Third brother was Brother Otis Burrell. He was from Philadelphia. He and his wife came up once or twice. And then Orlando Dyfer, the co-elder in Allentown, Pennsylvania, with Claude Wider. Well, Orlando Dyfer, like so many brethren, and remember the story of their sister Amy sitting next to me at the New York 23rd Street Y talks, and the brother ran over it? Well, I was sure that day. I remember it. Now, the story is that to get to the end of it first, to make it more interesting, I had come down by train, I think, or bus. It doesn't matter, whichever was convenient to me, Friday night, and then I'd go back by one or the other. And Orlando Dyfer said, well, he said, why don't you come back with he and Ruby, Sister Ruby Dyfer, after the convention on a Sunday afternoon, not this one on 55, but later on, and you could have dinner with us at our home Sunday evening, right, and stay in our spare bedroom Sunday night. I'll take you early Monday morning to the train station and take you a fast train right into Philadelphia to go to work. Fine, I said. So, a lot of things happened with Orlando. He was another Pennsylvania Dutchman that had that fine German talk. But he was famous for, thus saith the Lord. He'd always start out with something in the scriptures where it ends with, thus saith the Lord, and then usually end his talk with, thus saith the Lord. And he was a good speaker in that respect. So, we had a key, I think, was it 5 minutes? I'm not sure. I would stand up on the side and walk clear on the side of the auditorium so the friends couldn't see me to the end and walk up on the stage, and that was the indication of the speaker that you got 5 minutes to go. And this is extra important because he's the last talk before lunch on this convention. So as I come up to walk up on the stage behind him, he says, here comes that evil servant. Now there's a gasp in the audience. See, those days, Brother Buck knows this, JWs call it the evil servant class. But little did they know that we were buddies, and he said it in jest. But we smiled, and that's it. When we come up and said, Nana, once it's being ready, would you? And as I start to say this, before the closing hymn, here comes my stepdad. Now what's wrong? He whispered to me, he says, Kenneth, your mother said you forgot the coffee. Ay, 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 ay. Everything's ready but me. So I got to close it quickly. Tell Brother Dyfer, you pray the prayer, and I got to run down to the A&P, which is about 3-4 blocks away, and order so many pounds of 8 o'clock coffee, A&P 8 o'clock coffee, have it percolate on the ground and get it up. We did it. We made it. You can't have a convention without coffee. Next speaker was Bill Geiser, and we covered him pretty good. The next alphabetical speaker, now this were all the same day they had over a period of those years. The next speaker would be Pankow Hodges, one of my favorites. And then Peter Coleman, we talked about him. And Raymond Krupa, we'd bring him down. And Ray was such a good talker. Ray and Bernie would come down. Sometimes Timmy would come. But I remember Timmy said that Brother Woodworth played the trombone, and he taught Timmy Krupa how to play the trombone. And Arthur Crumpo, he was frequent. Stuart Livermore. Stuart came from the Patterson class, I think, and later on he moved to Israel. And he was a good friend, too. But I didn't see him as much as I did those, because he didn't come to the Dawn. The only time I saw him was when we had a Patterson convention, Patterson, New Jersey. Next alphabetical was Ludlow Loomis, and he was a dear brother. He was the one that answered the letters in the back of the Dawn, and he was the one that spent his last year or so at the Wilmington Ecclesia, living with the Collins there, Peter and Mirza. And later on, when they died, when Peter died, he left them. I think he went back to Cleveland, his home base, and he made his will, and he died shortly after that. That the money that he had left, whatever it was, should go to rent the large law school auditorium at the University of Delaware in Wilmington. And that's where I met Brother... Oh, we covered that, too. That's where I met Brother Crumple, who could die from Maine. Ludlow, well, one of the sisters told me this. He was leading a prayer, praise, and testimony meeting at the 23rd Street Y one afternoon, and brethren were taking a long time to bring their points across, the testimony brethren. And this brother talked so long that Ludlow stood up there and dozed off. And they had a shaking to wake him up. He leaned against the platform and dozed off. A wonderful memory. He memorized the scriptures. What a beautiful memory. We've had him in our house many times. Wonderful brother to talk to. Let's see, alphabetically, Martin Mitchell. Well, he and I were very close. John McCauley. John was a pilgrim brother. He'd never been to our pet convention because he was never at the Dawn when we had a convention. And I remember he was very precise. If he would be talking and one of the sisters would have a baby that would be crying, he would stop the talk and say, "We will not resume until that baby stops crying." Embarrassing to the mother, but I guess that was his way of doing it. Leon Norby, alphabetically Harry Patience. Now there's a story. Another lovely Greek friend. He had the photodrama, the original photodrama. Now remember, records from Roy Mitchell in New York, and he put them on reel-to-reel tapes for me, all the slides. So I found out that Brother Harry and Fanny came up, and they spent the weekend with us. And I asked him, could you bring that heavy, oh, it was a heavy piece of equipment, the original photodrama, slide machine and the slides. And then I was trying to describe it on the stage, and he came across an exceptionally appealing slide, and I asked him, would he hold it? Well, he held it too long, and the heat of the machine broke the glass slide. And I was so embarrassed, I didn't know what to say. I felt like there was a hole there. I'd crawled into it and pulled it shut. But he was very nice. He said, "That's all right." In fact, when he got back home, he invited me to come out. And I didn't have a job that summer. I was working around, helping the class, and putting out tracks and things like that, going to public meetings with him in the other cities. And he invited me to come out for a couple of days. In fact, he said 10 days. So I took a bus out. He met me at the station. And he lived on a farm. And he was another one of the Greek group out there, wonderful Greeks. I think his son, one of his sons, is with the Dawn now, or in the New York Ecclesia. But he took me out to the cemetery where the pastor's buried, with that pyramid out there. And the nice thing of all, he took me to the old Bible house, which was still standing in Allegheny, Pennsylvania. That since it was merged into the city of Pittsburgh. And we'd go up the steps. It must have been rough on the old people, who says, the three stories there. And we had studies up there, meetings up there, whatever, exactly what they did at the times of Brother Russell. It's since torn down. But Brother Patience was a wonderful brother, patiently. Another brother that wrote the Greek Open to me. I was so blessed to meet these wonderful Greek brethren. I think you would find out that the Italian brethren seem to congregate more around the Connecticut and the Polish brethren around the Detroit area, but the Greek brethren seem to go to New York City, where Pantelhazes was a hairdresser. Wonderful brethren. And then Mark, alphabetically, Michael Samuels, Claude Wider, and Norman Woodworth. That was the speakers at our York convention. Another note I have here on page 11 of my notes. Let's see now. The last convention in York, Pennsylvania was Sunday, June the 16th, 1962. We showed the Bible Answers film from the Dawn. They brought out this new series of films, about five or six of them. We brought them down, had a few speakers, but the main thing was the films. And our climax was the public meeting on film, The Beginning and Ending of Death. We counted 86 plus people at the public meeting. The following Sunday, I forgot who we brought down, but no one showed up. In fact, from all the conventions we had, the public meetings we had, and all of the speakers, not one person came to our follow-up meetings or to our memorial. But we did our job anyways. So, New York City elders, that was the 23rd Street YMCA. That was their class headquarters, of course. And I went to Brooklyn Wednesday night with a little group over there. The three brethren, I mentioned Roy Mitchell. He was so nice enough to record on the reel-to-reel tape the voice of Pastor Russell on the old Photodrama of Creation recordings. And Henry Anderson, I don't quite remember too much, but Russell Dean, Russell gave a wonderful talk about he shall go about with a roaring lion. I don't have time to look up the scripture, but he was on a safari over there in Africa, and he heard a roaring lion. He says, when that roar comes, it just brings fear into the prey. If the animals are feeding somewhere nearby, the old male lion, now they, the female, the lioness, pounces and runs them and gets them. But no, the old devil, the old boss, the male lion, he just lies there and gives a terrible roar out. And he said, when you hear that, it frightens you, even though you know they're a mile away and they can't hurt you. Now, can imagine a prey that's running and they just stop dead in fright. And that's how the old boy can go up and get his food himself. But one of the stories he used to tell us, I don't remember much more about Brother Russell, but I remember that incident. Otis Burrell's wife, I've forgotten her name, but she lived a long time after he died. In fact, I think she spent a couple of years up at the Dawn. But she was with the Philadelphia class, and I remember Marissa Coleman would tell us at the Wilmington class that occasionally they'd go over and talk to her or take some sisters over from the woman there that you're a wonderful family. Wonderful family. In our studies at New York University, we studied all types of management. And the problem is, see, you didn't have time to talk to the professor. These are high-paid men. So you better be in your seat when he starts, because he won't allow you to interrupt his discussion, his lecture, for almost 60-some minutes. But when it's over, you can make an appointment with his secretary before the class meeting, and he'd give you about 4 or 5 minutes in his office, a few steps away from the speaker. But I remember a study they made up there, and they told us about it. They said that they made tests to prove on the length of time that the professor can hold an audience, and they agreed that the absolute maximum time was 60 minutes. And they suggested that limit it to between 55 and, say, 58 minutes, because after 60 minutes, their tests showed that the mind starts to wander. I see now that some of the conventions are allowing them like 45 minutes or 50 minutes, which is good. But anyways, you do get, that seat gets hard there, like Sister Amy Mitchell yelled out that time at speakers about time, and you get restless, but the Lord knows that. See, we're expected to use our common sense, too. But wonderful in those days, and wonderful today. I'm isolated now, all alone, and as my doctor says, you're loaded with osteoarthritis. It works on the joints. But the Lord gives me this to keep me going. I write to the conventions and try to get tapes, which I pay for. And then I listen to the good ones. And then I send some of them I use to dub for things like this. And then I send some to Homer Montague in Hempstead, New York, because he either mails them to Ghana in Africa, or takes them over himself. He told me in their visit in January of this year, 2004, I think he and Paul Mallory went over there and he took 100 tapes over. You see, they not only hear the truth from established elders, and I would send them nothing unless I screen it, but they also learn English, to speak English. It's a wonderful fact. And he appreciates that, and I appreciate it too. It was before that the Lord sent me to Tacoma, Washington. Did I tell you I drove all the way across country? Everything I owned was in that car. My clothing, my volumes, my reprints, my Bible, and what have you. And it was loaded down. Well, I can see why now the transmission went out when I came back 6 months later. Because the sister, Louise Fitzpatrick, with whom I stayed till I got an apartment in Tacoma, they invited me out. She was my secretary, and her brother, Niles, was the elder. And she asked me to stop in LaSalle, Illinois, and see someone, I've forgotten his name, that he had her father's original photodrama equipment, the big heavy machine and the slides and everything, and she asked if I'd stop and take him out to Tacoma. Well, I never realized how big it was, and we had the dickens of the time to find space in the car. And see, this is what's happening when the car is overloaded and it wasn't geared that way for a trailer, see? All this loads in the back, in the back seat, in the trunk and everything. So we're going up the, first of all, the Rocky Mountains, up to 5,000-6,000 feet, and then down and then a little bit, and then up the Cascade Mountains. The same way, and all that pool, everything. So I was there about 6 months out in Tacoma when the Lord sent me back to York, Pennsylvania to live with my niece. And I found out then that the transmission was gone. So I sold the car, and I got a couple hundred dollars for it. And I was in New Lancaster, so it didn't matter too much. We'd ride back and forth. Little story just to add to the tape here. In Washington, we had our weekly studies, of course, and there I learned about the terrible things of divorce, where the mother is in the truth consecrated and the father is not, and the girl, the daughter's around 12, 13 years old. The mother would bring the daughter to the study, and the father's the one who wasn't in the truth. He instituted the divorce, and it was terrible. It's the first time I was experiencing it, and I listened more as the older brethren talked to this dear sister. I think I learned more than she did about it, but everything worked all right. I remember that I had fellowship there with a brother who lived in a HUD unit, Housing Urban and Development, and he liked to run around with me. He was a good pal. I would drive him up the 6,000-foot level of Mount Rainier. You see, if you went above that 6,000-foot, you had to have a guide with you. The mountain goes up about 13, 14,000 feet. So I'd take him up there, and it was beautiful up there. And then he wanted to go to the ocean, the Pacific Ocean, and feed the gulls. We did that, and we just became good friends. He was a retired railroad man, lived by himself. And when I left, I came there the end of August, I guess, of 1980. And I left about February, middle of February, 1981. And that's a terrible, terrible story. And he said goodbye to me. And I just missed a snowstorm in the Cascade Mountains. 4 4ths into one in the Rocky Mountains, and I don't want to go into that anymore. It was just a frightening thing. You're out there, and you're going 5,500-6,000 feet, and you stop at Cheyenne, Wyoming, to find a motel. They're all full, and the snow's coming out of your left from Canada across the terrible, and the highway is starting to pick up, and I have to get, oh, that's frightening. So I stopped at the motel on the border of Nebraska, Ogallala, Nebraska, named after the Indian tribe, the Sioux Indian tribes called the Ogallala Sioux, Nebraska and Wyoming area. That's a story I want to forget. I went through a lot of misery there, a lot of trials there, until we got moving on the highway again. But I finally get back to York, and my niece wanted to stay with her. That's another story. She and her boyfriend, which I shouldn't have done, but what am I going to do? Then I met the Lancaster Ecclesia, then back and forth from Lancaster to Wilmington, what have you, and then to Phoenixville. So I guess I finally settled with Phoenixville again. until I was called to go to Wisconsin. Here, I remember now another story about Michael Stamatis. He and I were so close. He said when he came here from Greece, I think before World War I, he settled in the New York area, New York City, with the rest of the Greek brethren, and I think he wound up at the Dawn. And he told me, he says, when he came here, he joined the Greek Ecclesia, and there was a brother there who wanted to marry a recently widowed woman. And this woman didn't want to get married again. So he goes to the elder, I don't know whether he was consecrated or not, but he goes to the Greek elder and says, can you make that sister marry? The elder says, I can't make you do that. So he withdrew from the truth. He just took off. Brother Michael said, that's the last he saw him. What's that 91st song? 1,000 shall fall at that right hand, 10,000. You better believe it. We could go on, you and I could go on this way for hours about the dear friends we've seen years ago that have given it up or just walked out. But it's so close to the end. It's so close. Make your calling and election sure. Pauly, now that I remember it and I'm reflecting, was very strong on John 17. He called it the greatest prayer ever given. And he could put pathos into it. He would divide it up in sections, and I'll tell you, when he was done with that, you learn to appreciate that wonderful scripture, the 17th chapter of John. And we do thank him for that. A sister at the 23rd Street YMCA, a nurse, and Norma Mitchell, who lived with her mother in Brooklyn, I think she became very sick. And I think right before that, this sister, I've forgotten her name, had moved somewhere to New England. And I remember they told me that I used to get my reel-to-reel tapes from Norma. She'd go to the conventions as much as she could travel. And she'd make a setup for me and then send them to me, and I'd play them and let Mother hear them and then send them back to her. But she spent her last days up there in New England somewhere with this dear sister who was a nurse, and she really took care of her. I talked to the sister a short time after Norma passed away. I didn't know she was up there, but I was so close to that Mitchell family. It was so wonderful, wonderful people. Little memories like that come back to you. You like to remember the good things, just like the Lord does when he brings them awake in the kingdom. Isn't that wonderful? Lundquist, the Swedish masseuse lady from way out in Long Island, she was the one that did that wonderful job of the tabernacle. You've probably heard that she made exact replicas of it, tremendous, and had it in her basement, the big original that you could see, and that's the one they made slides of, and she always invited me out, but something happened. See, I mean, I was so tied up with working full-time day and a lot of times, and studying all day Saturday with the college work, and Sundays at 23, I didn't have time to go out. But she let me have a set later on before she died, and she only charged me a certain amount. And I took it with me all over the country. I showed it in Wisconsin. I showed it in Tacoma, Washington. But she did. It was such a lifelike job of the characters portrayed in the tabernacle. And then later on, when we found out that the Mennonite people in Lancaster, which was 25 miles east of York, Pennsylvania, they had a full replica. And I talked to the Mennonite with them. They never heard of Sister Lundquist, but it doesn't matter. She never heard of them. And they had a good exhibit over there. But, of course, it wasn't true. I would go over there once or twice and take some brethren over and explain to them, now, this is the Mennonite in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. They are not the truth. But if you want the real truth of the tabernacle, then you get Sister Lundquist. The Lundquist Foundation, I think they set up a foundation for it. And I carried a full set of these slides all over the country with the voice that I made for myself. And I think I later gave it to, Bill and Mary's son-in-law and daughter, David and Marcia Halk. His name... One of my dearest friends with the Dawn, even today, is Leo Post. I first met him when I came down from Marshall, Wisconsin, to Chicago, to a convention. And, well, no, I'd seen him before somewhere, and he remembered me. And he wanted to introduce me to his earthly sister, who is also a consecrated sister. And I've had Leo in my apartment in Towson, Maryland. His first wife came down. Wonderful brother. He would come down just to talk to the group here. I remember one time we couldn't get him to come down to our Baltimore conventions with in our printed notes here, you see a copy of our first convention. But he did come down one Saturday afternoon and spent the whole day with me, and we made dinner, and then he talked to the little group up there, and he'd come down later on. And I always felt relaxed when I talked to Leo. He was kind and patient, and, well, he's one of the brethren that I love very much. I'm still alive. When they came out at the dawn with the Bible answer stones, the first one was the Lord of Lords and King of Kings. And I got a hold of it. And we were the first one to show it over a television station. There's a station in York, Pennsylvania, WNOW, was the call letters. So I asked them to send it down to me, and they did, and I reviewed it at home on a 60mm projector. And I went in and talked to the station manager, and he and his assistant reviewed it, and they liked it. So they charged me maybe $25 to $30, whatever it was, and they showed it to me twice. It's 6 o'clock Sunday and 11 o'clock Sunday. Little did I know, Sunday evening at 11 o'clock, the second showing was the sign-off time for the television station WNOW in New York, Pennsylvania. They went out of business. So I'm up there at the New York convention. I'm testifying. I'm standing up. And I just happen to think, oh, I got to catch that train back to York. So I get back there by 6 o'clock to watch the showing on the television station of the Lord of Lords, King of Kings. And then we also worked with Chicago. We got some film from them. We just had wonderful times with our little classes and everything, our public meetings. We did everything to draw the people there, any little gimmick you could bring on. It would bring a few out, but that was the last. I mean, they just didn't follow up. Our town of 50,000. And then, of course, you had the surrounding areas, Hanover, Red Line, what have you. But Mother was class secretary, and we had built up a mailing list from advertising for our conventions, what have you, for about 1,500 people. Think of that. And I tell you, none of them, I don't think I remember any of them followed up, or I didn't write a second time, but they wrote for the literature or what have you, and send it to them and pick up the advertisements. And every time we put an advertisement in the paper for a convention or for a public meeting, we'll leave a coupon in the bottom, write for this free, this so-and-so, post office box, whatever it is. But unusual, no one ever came from those tremendous efforts we put across for the public meetings, how we tracked it. But we loved it. People at the Dawn used to kid us when I would go over there. They say, that York team, that York convention down there, they have usually more public than they have brethren. And that was about true. We usually average about 50 people at a public meeting. Isn't that unbelievable for a town that size? But nobody ever followed up. Nobody ever came. And I would bring these speakers down following Sunday after the convention, or bring them down during the winter season and apologize. That's all right, they say. We appreciate it. At least we had fellowship with the speaker and their wives. A lot of memories, a lot of memories. To the Baltimore Jewish Times, which was voted one of the finest Jewish publications in the country. It's a weekly, published here in Baltimore County. And I understand from what they said that there's a tremendously large population of Jewish people in the Baltimore County area. Baltimore County, you know, is the second largest county of seniors in the country, second only to Dade County, D-A-D-E, Dade County, Miami, Florida. And they would bring all these dear brethren over. In other words, Baltimore is so big on Jewish, they have their own special Holocaust Memorial Museum in downtown Baltimore. And I never had a chance to see it because of my physical condition. But someday I'd like to get together and follow up on the Jews. I've already sent to my three Jewish doctors and the editors of the Jewish Times the two books published by New Brunswick Ecclesia. I'd love to get something going here and bring Ken Rawson and Bob Gray down, if it's possible, to give a lecture with Israel Appointment Destiny. I think I gave a copy of that video to the Associated, the key Jewish group here. but there are a lot of Jews. I would gather that they're third only to New York City, would have the largest Jewish population. The Florida area, the next, and I think Baltimore County. It's a lot of, they're building synagogues like a Dickens. So it's something to do. We never give up, do we? I'm looking forward to that. Here with John 14, 3, Revelation 14, verse 3, verse 13, and hymn number 7. The Lord bless you, and we send this forward with our prayer that the Lord will encourage you to be as enthused as I am, to bring love together, to join together, to love together.